When the sun sets and the twilight settles, we're left with only darkness and whatever lurks within it. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm your host, Maria Segura, and you're listening to Seattle Public Radio at 1 in the morning. Tonight, filling our 1 a.m. slot, the late-night radio horror, Elder Sign, starring Jasmine Jang as Hazel Blair and Anthony Mendoza as Jason Reed, featuring narration performed by David Zybert. Tonight's tale, Murder on the Farm.
My son, heed my words. I have seen the heralds of our world's destruction, their tendrils descending from the swirling heavens. I have seen the long-forgotten gods and evils that lie in wait for their callings. I have seen the darkened minions that plot in the depths of our world, their counterparts drifting toward us through the cosmic void. Protect yourself, my son. Always remember the Elder Sign. Weeks passed since Hazel's discovery of the strange book found in the Blethyn house. She sat at the wooden dining table, her listless green eyes staring down at the massive tome before her, its mysterious symbol, the Elder Sign, staring up at her. 2 weeks ago, Hazel had found this strange book hidden within a dark subterranean location within the Blethyn house, and she had only just barely scratched the surface of its contents. Several subjects within the book made no sense to Hazel. Things of astonishing implausibility. One such subject stated how there are, as the writer claimed, cruel bipedal serpents living beneath our feet in vast underground utopias, preparing for a war with the surface above. Other entries were openly outlandish. For instance, how one of Blethyn's many collaborators wrote on how he killed something unusual. They all described the creature as a lobster-like fungus with clipped wings, like a prized bird that the owner did not wish to see gone. Finally, there were the truly deranged collection of scripts, archaic and bizarre writings Blethyn and his partners had collected over many years. Many of such texts referred to ancient beings from the void beyond our insignificant and moot world, beings that man would attribute to gods. Words of lunacy written by one of Seattle's finest men. She had been reading for hours, and only now, after 36 sleepless hours, was Hazel beginning to feel drowsiness take her. With a smile, Hazel began to drift between the world of reality and dream, closing her eyes as her mind darkened.
Hello? Hazel Blair.
Hazel?
Chief Daniels. I didn't expect a call from you at this hour, sir.
Hazel, it's 8 in the morning.
Oh my god. Yes, sir, you're right. I'm sorry, time just... What is that you need, sir? Is this about a case?
I just wanted to call to see how you were doing. It's been about 2 weeks since we last talked, and that was about the Blethyn case. Are you doing all right after all that?
Yes, I'm fine, sir.
What about your car? Is it still in the shop? I know the accident did a real number on it.
Yeah, I was lucky it wasn't totaled. 3 or 4 days until it's fixed, so not much longer, I guess.
That's good to hear. I'm glad to know that you're doing all right. I was also happy to hear that the accident wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it was just some minor bruising. Well, that and the gash on my head. But I got the stitches out a couple days ago, so I'd say I'm fully recovered.
Good. Jason said that you haven't come into the station to fill out a report about what happened that night in the hospital. Is that true?
Sir, I don't think that's...
Hazel, you know as well as I do that your report is vital if we want the case to stay alive. The plates from the car were fake, and 2 weeks is a lot of time, a lot of wasted time. If you want us to catch these scumbags before someone else gets hurt, we need you down here. What you have to offer could make the difference between catching these thugs or not.
What about Davis and Jason? Shouldn't they be leading the investigation? I mean, they are the best homicide has to offer.
You're right, Hazel, but it's not the best case for them. We've got Ganglin and Vice working leads, but you know as well as I do that that takes time. Jason and Davis are too valuable to have them focusing all efforts on it. Besides, they're far too close to the case. What with the hit targeting them, I can't have them on the investigation and have the stress break them.
Like it did for me.
You know that's not true. You're still the best damn detective Seattle's ever seen.
Well, after that disappointment at the hospital, I don't think you or any of the other deputy chiefs will be needing me again for a while. Or ever.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Wait, does that mean...
I've got a case for you over in Bellevue. It's a little out of the way, but Bellevue wants Seattle to take the case. They've got their hands full, and they asked if we'd take the load off. I'd like you to help with the investigation, if you're up for it.
Well, I thought that after...
That after what happened at the hospital that we'd bench you? We're not going to take cases away from you, don't worry. But... Let's be honest here, Hazel. You broke laws and endangered yourself as well as others. You showed complete lack of responsibility while on the case. When Davis informed me about your escapades at the hospital, you can imagine that I wasn't too happy with your performance. The DA has seriously considered taking action and taking the license away permanently.
Yes, but sir, I...
Let me finish. I understand that you're in a rough place right now. You have been ever since Steven's accident, and I know that Davis has some prejudice with you. So everything involving you is, frankly, exaggerated. So, with that, and Jason claiming that he sent you to the hospital under his directive, I'm willing to let this slide. Those circumstances are enough for me to give you one more chance, but only one. Do you understand?
Yes. Thank you, sir. You don't need to worry. Nothing like last time will ever happen again. I'll run everything by you and Jason.
Good. And to see that you won't, I've made sure that Jason keeps an eye on you while on the case. You can consider him your superior for the time being.
Wait, so Jason is now, what, babysitting me? Was this his idea?
No, this was mine. Like I said, you lost some trust with the district attorney and me with what happened. Now I talked the DA down and we are not going to pull your license. You're not even going to go through a disciplinary hearing, so think of that as a plus. With all that in mind, I've asked Jason to shadow you on this case to show me if you're really ready to work on cases with the police, and he agreed. So, if Jason says you're ready, you'll be a permanent asset to the force. On anything I may think we need you on, it'll be like you never left. All you need to do is get through this one case with Jason, and you'll be set. All right?
Understood, sir. So, what exactly are the details on this case?
Well, first things first, it's on a farm.
The afternoon sky was filled with clouds that day as Jason and Hazel drove to the crime scene. Even as the sun gleamed behind them, it was not enough to break the sense of foreboding that the clouds brought. Hazel sat silently in the passenger seat of Jason's car, looking out the window at the fences and the roving fields of farms behind them. Jason drove down the pavement, his fingers drumming on the steering wheel as he played a song in his head. He made a slow right turn, and the car began to drive down a dirt road, passing by a crudely built gate that was pushed to the side. Several hundred yards away was a house and barn with vehicles all parked out in front of them. Hazel continued to stare out her window, seeing the open field with grazing horses and cattle coexisting happily upon the grass. The car slowed as they approached the familiar police vehicles.
You ready?
Yeah, I guess.
What? Ah! Damn it!
What happened?
Mud. Mud is what happened.
Shit. Do you need anything?
Yeah, those napkins over on the dashboard.
Sure, here.
Thanks. God, we're some of the best investigators on the West Coast, and where do they think we'll be useful? A farm. Go, why are there even farms in Seattle?
Well, technically we're in Bellevue.
Same difference. It's practically one huge city. Could you lock the door?
Yeah. Come on, you have to admit that you needed some fresh air anyways.
Says the person who's been locked up in her apartment for 2 weeks, leaving us to deal with the hitmen case without any information.
Thanks for pointing that out, Jason.
I'm not going to give you a hard time about it, Hazel. You've had a rough enough time with having no car and your head all stitched up. Besides, you heard what I had to say the morning after all that, so let's not dwell on it.
I guess.
Oh, lighten up. It's kind of like old times, right? You and me investigating a brutal murder with everyone above us watching. Though, I wish we were doing this in the city and not from what looks like a scene out of Straw Dogs. Listen, it wasn't my idea to supervise you.
Don't you mean babysit me?
It's just a formality. Just something the chief can use as proof to the others that you're still one of the best.
Uh-huh.
Least you could do is act like you're happy to be here. I mean, Chief Daniels talked the hospital out of pressing charges against you. You're practically walking away from that botched case without having to go to court or explain yourself to the DA. Not to mention, you get to keep your PI license. The chief and I are sticking our necks out for you. At least try to be grateful.
I am grateful, trust me. I just don't like the idea that it's one slip-up and I'm done.
Like I said, it's just for this one case. Then you and me will practically be partners again, okay?
Yeah, okay. So what exactly happened here? The chief didn't really give me anything to go off of, said you'd fill me in. I know there was a murder, but where...
Well, at around 6 this morning, Miss Darla Allen found the body of her husband, Richard Allen, inside the barn, over there by the house.
From the barn came several coroners, each holding plastic bags that they carried to their vehicle. Each large, clear plastic bag contained the extremities of Richard Allen, the farmer and victim. Arms and legs ripped from the torso were placed into their own bags, each ending with a stump of ripped meat and gore. The torso was carried by two coroners, the chest crumpled in on itself, ribs sticking out from flesh and muscle. The stomach's skin was completely non-existent, the innards and once pumping organs now sloshing and bubbling at the bottom of the bag. The face was truly the most terrifying and ultimately most gut-wrenching piece Hazel saw. Short blonde hair was coated red by the splatter upon the inside of the bag. The skull on the right side was broken in on itself like a cracked egg, the brain spilling out in long gray noodles. Rigor mortis had locked the face in an expression of extreme terror. The eyes were wide and protuberant. The once white of the eyes was now reddened with the pooling blood behind them. Mr. Allen's mouth was fixed in a permanent scream, his pink tongue stiff up in the roof of his mouth. The neck was severed, the skin and veins splayed like meaty tentacles as they spread across the plastic of the bag. The pink trachea still exuded plasma that pooled at the bottom, the crimson liquid sloshing as it collected in the corners and creases.
Well, what was left of his body at least?
Jesus Christ, who could have done something like that?
A crazy person. The officers that responded were told by Mrs. Allen that there was someone inside the barn, covered in blood and unconscious. Apparently, he was living with the Allens. When police went inside, they found him unconscious on the barn floor, covered in the victim's blood, body parts just lying around. One report I read back at the station just said horrific when describing the inside of the barn.
From the home, a shouting voice was heard, stopping Hazel and Jason in their place as they watched officers drag a man wearing loose-fitting jeans and a blood-soaked plaid shirt out of the house, leading him to a squad car.
I didn't do it! I swear to God, I didn't! Get your hands off me!
In case you might have missed him, that's the guy, our lead suspect.
Let go of me! It wasn't me! It was them! They did this! They did this!
Yeah, he seems a little off.
That's because he is. Mrs. Allen apparently believes that he's some sort of psychopath.
He doesn't really seem all that psychopathic. He just looks confused and upset more than anything. He doesn't even seem to know what's happening.
Regardless, forensics is going to take a look at the barn and check it with a fine-tooth comb. Well, when they decide to show up, that is.
Wait, If forensics isn't even here, then what's the point of us being here? Why are we not interrogating the guy that you think did all this?
Well, officers ran into a problem when they arrived on scene. Mrs. Allen has been in pretty bad shock since all this happened, so they didn't get a name for the guy.
We don't have his name yet? I'm gone for 2 years, and the entire Seattle police force crumbles.
The guy didn't have any ID on him. All he had, according to the officers that found him, was $5 in cash and a pen. Nothing else. And it'll take 2 hours to run prints, so it's best to talk with the witness first, then interrogate him.
So, we drove an hour outside of the city, and all we're really doing is finding out some dude's name. Good to know that this is what we've been reduced to, figuring out the identity of a guy living in a barn.
That's not all we're here to ask. Before she clammed up, the wife told officers that Sleepy Barn Guy and her husband were arguing a lot recently. When they asked why, she demanded a detective and went inside. We're just here to fill in the cracks and then talk with the mystery man. This is a simple case. It's half the reason the chief brought you in on it. We solve it, prove to everyone you're still at the top of your game, and we move on.
You really expect it to be that easy?
Well, did you see the guy we pulled from the barn? Once we have the murder weapon and figure out who this guy is, we'll leave him for the DA to convict. Open and shut, like I said.
Wait, so you don't think there's even a remote possibility of this guy being innocent?
Of course not. The fact that he's literally drenched in blood is enough for me to say he's our guy. So unless he decided to take a bath in the farmer's guts while swimming around with limbs and organs after the murderer left, I seriously doubt he just happened to be there.
Maybe he's covered in blood because he tried to help.
Help do what? Put him back together?
You seriously think that some guy staying with them all of a sudden decided to rip him apart? It seems shaky at best, Jason.
I've seen a lot of regular people do a lot of really horrible things for some pretty petty reasons.
Like Adam Mercer.
Yeah. Like him.
So, what kind of weapon do you think he used? I mean, someone couldn't do that with his bare hands.
It shouldn't be hard for forensics to find the murder weapon when they canvass the barn. I mean, to do that much damage to the body, we're looking for a bloody chainsaw or something. It can't be that hard to miss. But let's have forensics look over the barn. We'll focus on getting something useful from Mrs. Allen, then grill the suspect back at the station.
They passed through the parlor of the home, officers standing outside the dining room, waiting to be relieved.
We'll take it from here, guys.
She's in the dining room?
Yeah. Remember what I said in the car. Be tactful. We can't give the people looking to oust you ammunition. Got it?
The way you said it in the car made it sound like be tactful meant don't talk.
Take what I said any way you want. Just don't piss anyone off. Excuse me, Mrs. Allen?
Mrs. Allen turned around in her chair, her sad blue eyes red from crying. She wore a thin sweatshirt and blue jeans, something she had probably just thrown together at random. Her dark brown hair whipped around when she turned, and she pushed several strands away from her face, revealing sad, thin lips.
Yes?
Hello there. My name is Detective Reed. This here is Investigator Blair.
Hello there.
We're just here to ask a few more questions. Do you mind if we sit down?
No, please, Detective.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks.
Now, Mrs. Allen, just to go back over it all, you were the one that found your husband in the barn, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
I listened back to the call you made to the Bellevue police early this morning, before we came down here. To the operator, you said you also found the man who'd been staying with you, passed out near the remains. Is that also correct?
Yes. I found him asleep on his side in the blood. It was...
Focus on me, Mrs. Allen.
Darla.
Okay, Darla. With that out of the way, we're going to ask some simple follow-up questions. I feel that the officers that responded to the scene got plenty of useful information, so we're just here to fill in the cracks.
All right. That's fine. Anything I can do to help you put away that horrible man.
You never told the operator or the officers the man's name. Do you know what it is?
His name is Daryl Crick. We took him in a few months ago. Found him sleeping in the barn. Richard said he could stay and even get some cooked meals if he helped around the farm. Daryl agreed and helped feed the cattle. Sometimes he'd even help Richard clean the hooves of the horses. I never thought he'd do anything to Richard.
Do you know anything about Mr. Crick? Like where he lived before or where he worked? Maybe he told you if he has any family.
He, said he was from Dallas.
Dallas? As in Dallas, Texas?
No, Oregon. It's an hour out of Portland, I think.
All right. So you never explained to the officers why Daryl Crick was even staying with you. All you said was that the man lived in the barn. How did he show up?
Well, it was a while back. Good few months, at least. Richard and I were going to work on repairing a fence on the far side of the ranch one morning. When we went inside, we found him sleeping in the hay, just trying to keep warm. I didn't like the look of him. But Richard was always a kind person, always believed people were good at heart. He saw Daryl as someone who was just down on his luck, someone who just needed a little help and maybe some guidance. So he let him stay. I like to think Richard thought he could help Daryl.
Any reason for him to hurt you or your husband?
They were fighting almost every other day for about a month. Richard said that he was complaining about the work, that it was too hard and he didn't get paid enough. Farming can be a pretty difficult business, but Daryl never complained until about a month ago. I don't know what changed in him, but he got quite aggressive after Richard told him no.
That's it, though. Nothing else.
Well, Daryl, he never really liked me.
Never liked you?
I'm sorry, ma'am. What do you mean by that?
Lots of times, me and Richard would disagree on something. It's normal in marriage to sometimes disagree, I think. Richard and I always made it work, but I guess Daryl just didn't see it like that. He told Richard to stay away from me. Richard told Daryl just to mind his own business, but something changed in Daryl. He said that Richard should leave, get as far away from the farm as possible, but I honestly always knew something was wrong with Daryl from the moment I saw him. He was always acting strange, and I think, Detective, he may have...
May have what, Mrs. Allen?
I think he may have always wanted me. He always had his eye on me. He would watch me when I was out with Richard on the field or when we ate dinner. Once or twice, I actually caught him peeking on me from the barn before I went to bed. As I changed, Richard, he always told me to ignore it, but... Oh, Richard?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Allen.
As am I. You can expect us to do everything we can to bring justice to your husband.
Thank you, Detective. That means a lot.
Well, with the other officers' reports along with what you just told us, I think we have all we need. I'll be calling you if anything turns up or if we have any more questions. And of course, you can always call the station if you remember anything. Here's my card. It's got my number and extension there for you if you need to call.
Thank you. I'll call if I remember anything more.
Again, I'm very sorry for your loss.
Mrs. Allen gave an appreciative smile, nodding solemnly as they exited the home.
So what do you think?
I think? Why in the world would they call a city in Oregon, Dallas? Didn't they get the memo?
Jason.
Hazel, come on. I don't know. The poor lady just lost her husband and she thinks this Daryl Crick guy did it. Maybe she's exaggerating everything, but after everything I've seen and heard, maybe her feelings about him were spot on. Listen, if Dallas, Oregon is really where this guy is from, we may be able to find something out.
What are you looking for on him exactly?
Gah! Stupid mud! We'd be looking for police records. Maybe he had another charge in Oregon. I mean, it's possible that he could already be in the system. Maybe he has some family. We can check for them too. Just about anything and everything we can pull up on this guy will be useful when I talk to him at the station. The more information, the better. I want a clear picture on this guy before I interrogate him.
But the murder weapon still
hasn't... Yeah, don't worry. I didn't forget about the stupid murder weapon. We'll focus on Crick back at the station and hope forensics finds the weapon when they decide to show up.
Do you really think we should focus so heavily on Daryl Crick? If forensics finds
something... Speak of the devils, that must be them coming down the road. Finally here to do their job.
Jason, listen to me. Do we really want to pin all of this on Daryl Crick? What if something comes up and it turns out it couldn't have been him? Then you'll be stuck trying to explain to the chief and Davis why we wasted all our time going after Crick when we could have been looking for the actual murderer.
Hazel, do you see where we are?
Yeah, we're in Bellevue.
We're in the middle of nowhere. And here, on this particular farm in nowhere, there were only three people. You do the math, Hazel. There were only three people here. One is dead, One is grieving, and one is covered in blood. So out of the two people who were here, alive, which one do you think committed the murder? The grieving widow that's about half the guy's original height and who also called the cops? Or is it the clearly unstable guy found by officers unconscious, lying in blood? My money's on him, unless someone else was here in the middle of, as I said, nowhere.
You really think he's the murderer? And not just some scared guy who might have been at the wrong place at the wrong time?
I'll say it again for you, Hazel. They found him covered in blood. Unconscious. Lying next to organs and limbs.
And that doesn't strike you as weird?
It does strike me as weird, but I have an answer. Daryl Crick is crazy! We'll interrogate him at the station and get anything we can off of him. Enough to prosecute him, at least. That's all we need. Hazel, please don't try looking deeper into this like you did on the Blevin case. You're going to end up losing everything.
It's not always what's on the surface, Jason. And it's not always about pleasing the people above you. Sometimes to do a good job, you have to look beyond what's in front of you.
Even if it means breaking laws and getting injured. Let's head back to the station. Son of a... If being on a muddy farm wasn't bad enough, now we have to wait for forensics to pass us. Thanks for holding up the investigation, guys!
As the forensic vans moved down the dirt road, the vehicles drove past Jason's Honda on the left. Without warning, one of the van's tires sunk into the muddy hole while passing, splattering the windshield in thick brown mud.
I hate farms.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hey there, everyone. Have you ever wanted to know about what a historical literature icon thinks about things like Scotland? What about Jewish sororities? Cosmic horrors, the likes of which your mind could never possibly fathom? Well, you're not going to hear any of that from some lame author like Shakespeare, Mark Twain, or Homer. No, you'll hear it from the one and only H.P. Lovecraft, literary master of cosmic horrors. Ask Lovecraft is a horribly delightful podcast made to enlighten and expand the mind whilst portraying one of the most prolific horror authors of the past 100 years. Played by the great Leman Kessler, H.P. Lovecraft is back from the abyss to help our feeble minds grasp at fleeting knowledge as we float through the dark void, slowly dying away. The show, Ask Lovecraft, can be found on YouTube at www.youtube.com/user/lemurboy. Boy, spelled B-O-U-I. Ask Lovecraft can also be found and listened to on Tumblr at ask-lovecraft.tumblr.com. To support the show, you could also consider donating to the Ask Lovecraft Patreon at patreon.com/AskLovecraft. You'd better watch his program, because we're watching you. Always.
And now, back to the show.
Daryl Crick sat in the interrogation room for hours on end. Hands cuffed to the table, he sat on a steel chair, his eyes darting back and forth, looking at the concrete brick walls of the room. He didn't even attempt to look into the reflective glass. He knew they were watching. Behind the glass, Hazel observed Daryl, examining his every movement. As she watched, Jason walked down the hall, paper folders in hand.
Showtime!
Daryl's fingers drummed on the stainless steel of the table, attempting to focus as much as possible on the beat. He ground his teeth as his eyes darted around the room. I can't quite remember what Hazel said he was looking for. I only remember that she said he was clearly afraid.
Hey there, Daryl.
Daryl did not even crack a smile.
Not even a hello?
Daryl sat there, his eyes unblinking and his face contorting to one of anger. He said nothing.
That's fine. Here, I'll just start the conversation. Let's take a look at what's in this folder, Daryl. How does that sound? So, why not start from the beginning? Daryl Crick, born 1981 in Dallas, Oregon. See, here's your birth certificate. Now, this is a little boring. How about we just get straight to the good stuff, huh? Oh, this is good. Asylum and hospice records. Ooh, juicy. Looks like in 2000 you were admitted to West Valley Hospital, then transferred to Providence Behavioral Hospice, after you nearly beat your girlfriend to death. Wow, that's pretty harsh. We managed to wrangle the psychiatrist's notes, and turns out you're a paranoid schizophrenic. That coupled with you being, what did the paper say? Bipolar! That's what it said. That coupled with you being bipolar makes a nasty little chemical cocktail, apparently. You liking the story so far? Because I have one hell of an ending for you.
I didn't kill him.
Excuse me? What was that, Daryl? I didn't quite hear you.
I didn't kill him.
Daryl now clenched his fists, the muscles protruding against the steel cuffs savagely. Jason reclined in the steel chair across from him, his eyebrow raising.
You sure you didn't, Daryl? Well, if you didn't, care to tell me what happened this morning?
Daryl's eyes turned away from Jason.
Sensitive subject. No, don't worry, I get it. Well, why not just tell me what you were doing in the Allen's barn before you started working there?
I was hitchhiking to Alaska. I wanted to work on the slope.
That's a pretty long trip. Almost 3,000 miles to get to Anchorage. Not a lot of people heading up that far. Why walk when you could just, I don't know, take a plane?
I've got no money.
And why don't you have any money?
I can't get a job because anytime I tried, they saw my record. No one wants to hire a fucking crazy person. That's why, pig.
Ah, all right then. Well, a crazy person like you must have medication, right? So did you have your medication with you, you know, at the farm?
Daryl simply sat there, using silence as a reply to Jason's question.
The wife says you and Mr. Allen got into fights, is that true?
Yeah. Him and me would get into arguments, but that's hardly anything. I felt like he should be paying me more. I worked hard on that farm, and I was making bare minimum.
Meals and shelter weren't enough for you.
Look, I wanted to leave, but I needed the money. I just thought I should get compensated more.
So that's why you killed him. He wouldn't give you what you wanted, so you just lost it.
I just told you, I didn't kill him!
Tears began to pool under Daryl's eyes. With a sudden burst, Daryl jolted up and back, attempting to break free from the cuffs. They served their purpose, however, digging into his wrist flesh. Daryl, his lips trembling, slunk back into his seat.
I didn't kill him.
Mrs. Allen said you liked her. Is that true, too?
What? Wait, what do you mean?
She says you like to peek on her from the barn. Must have found the old farmer's wife scenario pretty feasible with you only a few dozen yards away, huh?
Whoa, wait, hold on.
How many times did you do it, Daryl? Once? Twice?
Okay, look, I never said that. I never did any of that. I don't know what you're talking about.
She says you like to say how you'd take care of her. I mean, come on, it's not impossible, is it? Maybe you just liked her a bit too much, hmm?
I don't...
You don't what?
I don't know.
Okay, all right, look, I'm done with this idiot act, Daryl, so don't play stupid. She says you liked her, and I know what that means. You tried to get rid of Mr. Allen, but he just wouldn't go, now would he?
What do you mean? Told him to leave.
Mrs. Allen says you were trying to get Richard to stay away from her, to leave the farm entirely. He was always with her, wasn't he? You never could get your shot with her if he was always there. Have him leave the farm completely and you could just have your way with her. You think you could have done a better job at fucking his wife than him?
I didn't tell Richard to leave because I thought I'd take better care of his wife. I told him to leave because I liked him. I knew this was gonna happen.
I bet the barn had a pretty great vantage point.
What?
I said, I bet the barn had a pretty good vantage point. How else were you going to stare at Mrs. Allen?
Look, you're not understanding me.
I mean, all you needed to do was just watch and wait for the magic to happen, right? How about it, Daryl? You killed Mr. Allen to get to the farmer's wife, but what makes you think she'd ever want to be with you? So that pissed you off even further, I bet. First him for not taking care of her and treating her poorly, then her for not wanting to be with you.
Listen to me, you fat fuck! You're fucking crazy! I never said I liked her. She's crazy. And you're crazy for listening to her, too.
I don't need to prove anything to you because I didn't kill him! I can't believe you'd listen to what that bitch tells you. She's fucking crazy!
Unfortunately for you, Daryl, you're the crazy one. But you won't get off using that excuse in a Washington court. I'll see to that.
I just don't want to go to jail. I didn't do anything.
Jason shook his head in disgust, pushing open the door and entering into the hall. Hazel was still standing facing the glass, her large eyes staring at the sobbing man Jason had so callously berated. The door fully closed behind Jason, the latch clicking. Hazel turned to look at Jason, her eyes filled with scrutiny.
What the fuck was that, Jason?
Don't pull that with me, Hazel. He did it. You may look at him and see differently, but I see through that mental patient crap he uses to deflect. It's people like that that are most dangerous.
Jason!
I'm just trying to get information that could forward the case. I'm not going to apologize for that because he's messed up in the head.
You were never like this before, even after Adam Mercer—
Don't bring that into this, Hazel.
He fucking broke into my apartment, Jason. Remember? That's how you fucking caught him, because he came after me. Yet somehow I managed to keep myself level after all that, even though it was me that was in danger.
Hazel, the whole reason you're taking orders from me is because you can't keep yourself leveled. You're all over the goddamn place.
Just because Daryl's had some problems doesn't mean he's some sort of freak that needs to be tormented more than he already has. He's not Adam Mercer. He hasn't killed 13, 20-something girls and strung up their bodies.
You don't know that. You remember meeting Mercer? He was a nobody. A fucking barista. He acted innocent. He played off of everyone's emotions. Yes, we were stressed. We were rushing around for 6 months with nothing to go off of, and we had dozens of suspects. But Adam Mercer did this exact same thing. Kate James, the 10th woman found, came to us, saying she'd seen Mercer outside her apartment building. And when we looked into him, there was nothing. He had had a girlfriend, he had a job, he had a good family life, he had pets. He didn't fit the FBI's profile at all. But he came in, and I knew, because he did that. He acted like somehow he was a victim. That it couldn't have been him because he was a nobody. A face in the crowd, just like he wanted. It was an act. An act that you and the chief and the FBI all fell for. And then four other girls, including Kate, died. 4 or 5 years ago, I probably would have sympathized with Daryl Crick. He's got no family, no job, no future. But now, after being a detective for this goddamn long, I know there's a reason for all of that. It's because he's unstable. This man is a danger to society. So yeah, I yelled at him. I made him cry. I made him get angry. But you know what? I'd rather have to explain why I accused and screamed at an innocent man to the chief rather than live with myself if he does this sort of thing again. You, of all people, should know what it feels like to have to live with the guilt of someone dying and thinking maybe you could have stopped it. I'm just avoiding ending up like you did with Steven.
Shut up, Jason. Just shut up.
Hazel, I'm sorry, but...
I get how he feels, Jason. Okay? Everyone looks at me and thinks... They think I'm unstable or that I need to be pitied. Like, I need their sympathy or their help. But I would just like to mention that for an unstable woman who needs to be babied and nurtured and watched like I'm some kind of fish in a tank, at least I can do my job well enough to notice things that you, a goddamn detective, are failing to see.
Oh, for God's sake. Like what, Hazel? Please inform me what I'm forgetting to notice. Please.
Mainly first day in the academy things. How about the fact that his body language implies he's more terrified than anything? How about the fact that schizophrenics aren't fucking killing machines that run around wielding axes and chopping people up? Oh, and speaking of axes, how about the fact that we still have no fucking clue what the hell could have killed Mr. Allen because, as forensics told you before we came down here, no one can find the murder weapon.
I don't care what forensics says. They just missed it. It's in that barn somewhere, and if I have to move everything out of there myself, I will. Crick probably hid it someplace, so that way nothing we say will stick. There's no way they'd prosecute without a murder weapon. And that sicko in there knows it, just like Adam Mercer.
You said we'd be looking for a chainsaw. How difficult is it to find a chainsaw? What if, maybe, and I'm just assuming here, but what if Daryl Crick wasn't the murderer? What if instead he was knocked out before or after the actual murderer killed Richard Allen? What if this was all the point blame at the most obvious choice without taking into account the least obvious? The least obvious being that someone else was at the farm with a weapon and killed him? What if we can't find the stupid weapon because the actual murderer took it with him? Did you ever think of that?
Look, maybe you're right, but we still have to exhaust our search of the farm and eliminate everyone that could have done it. Daryl Crick being our lead suspect.
What about Mrs. Allen? You want me to drag her in there too so you can grill her next?
Mrs. Allen couldn't have taken down both Richard and Daryl by herself. And like I said earlier, there would be some sort of physical evidence either in the house or in the barn that points to her. Either it was Daryl or someone else was at that farm late last night or early in the morning. For now, I want you to go back to the barn. Maybe some fresh eyes could pick up something that we missed. If Mrs. Allen is home, ask her about Richard. See if there's anyone else he or she knew that would want to hurt him. Other than Daryl. I'm going to stay here. With him. See if he wants to say anything more. But my guess is he's going to wait till he has a lawyer in there with him.
Wait, I thought I was supposed to stay with you. The chief said that I...
The chief said that I was in charge. That I was your superior on this case. So, as your superior, I'm allowing you to go alone. Just take my car and be back by the time the cleanup crew arrives at 8. My keys are in my desk.
Look, Jason, I'm sorry that I blew up.
You're not, but that's okay. I should try and be a little more objective. I just really want this to go well, okay? We're under a lot of pressure. Especially you.
I understand. You want this to look good so I can maybe work closer with the police. I get it, and I want the same thing.
Good. I'd really hate for you to never work with the police again because someone wanted to kill us.
Don't worry, Jason. I promise not to get hurt this time. I'll rush over to the farm now. I'll call you when I get there.
Hey, Hazel?
Yeah?
Before you go, I have to ask. What have you been doing for the past 2 weeks? I've come by your place. I called your cell phone. You were acting a little weird the last time we talked at your apartment. I guess I'm just wondering what was so important that you literally had to drop off the earth.
This was a question that Hazel pondered over. She once told me that life was hardly ever choice, hardly coincidence. This was one of the moments Hazel found to be planned. Hazel knew what she had to do. But now was not the time to think of such things.
I was just busy with other clients, doing some investigating into someone special.
Do you mind if I ask who it is?
I'll let you know after I wrap it up, okay?
Yeah, sure.
With that, she began the long trip to the farm, unaware of the terror that lurked there. She drove Jason's car down the dirt road to the farm that skirted on the fringe of Bellevue. The mid-afternoon brought with it clouds that covered the sun above, giving the country a sort of gloom. She pulled into the farm's dirt road, leading to the barn and home where she saw that there were no other cars. The other officers had already left. She parked near the closed doors of the barn. Hazel pulled out her phone, putting in Jason's number and placing it upon her right ear.
Jason Reed. I'm not at the phone right now, so if you could leave a message, that'd be great. Thanks.
Jason, it's Hazel. I'm at the farm right now. I don't see any lights on in the house, so I don't think the wife's here. Look, I'm gonna see if anyone's here, and if not, I'll just see you back at the station. Hello? Mrs. Allen, it's Hazel Blair from earlier this afternoon.
Hazel lowered her hands when there was no reply but the melodies of the wind that whined and whistled in her ears. She then turned her head, looking into the barn where a man was ripped to shreds.
May as well check out the barn. Like Jason said, fresh eyes can't hurt. Ugh. Oh, wow. Forensics pretty much marked everything that wasn't hay in here.
She removed her penlight from her coat pocket, shining the light to illuminate the barn's interior.
There has to be something here. Something left here.
The barn's interior was dark and dank, the only light penetrating the darkness being Hazel's penlight and several soft beams of sunlight. She stepped past the large pool of blood collecting on the dirt floor, evidence markers littered around it. As she skirted alongside the puddle of gore, she focused her sight on a blanket that dangled from some sort of loft.
It's probably where Daryl was sleeping for the past few months. How could anyone live in here? It's so weird. It feels like I'm being watched every step I take. It could be because someone died literally hours ago, but it's creepy. Oh, God! Is that part of Mr. Allen? That is fucking disgusting. God.
Hazel kicked the wet piece of flesh away into a pile of hay.
Okay, come on, Hazel. Focus. There has to be something here.
The blonde began her search of the barn, looking for anything that could possibly connect to the murder of Richard Allen.
There has to be something they missed. Looks like they didn't move the hay piles. Forensics must have been more focused on the body and where Daryl Crick was lying. That figures.
She pushed the heavy bales of hay aside, seeing if there was any possibility of it being stuffed between or under the stacks. Hazel spent the better part of 20 minutes lifting and pushing the bales, looking for anything that could have been used in the murder. As she searched, however, she stumbled upon something much stranger.
What's this, a door? On the floor of the barn? It's probably just a crawl space or something. Maybe storage? Weird to have stacked hay on top of it. And why does it have this huge lock on it? Wait, what's the name say on this duct tape? Richard Allen. Come on, come on, come off, you stupid fuck! Why won't you? Come on! Ugh.
Defeated, Hazel leaned back away from the crawl space door, balancing on the balls of her feet.
God, what are you hiding down there? Maybe someone threw the murder weapon down there. That could explain why forensics didn't find it. They were so focused on the scene that they didn't even think to look under these huge piles. Maybe Jason's right. Maybe Daryl threw the murder weapon down there and locked it so we couldn't get to it. Or maybe it's something else.
Hazel wondered to herself if, like the Blethyn home, this farm had something to hide. Something sinister.
Jason will want to know about that crawl space. I should get back to the station and let him know what I found.
Hazel turned to look towards the large barn doors. She froze. Standing in the darkened corner of the room was a tall black figure. With a blink, the figure came rushing toward her. Then, all of a sudden, everything around her went black. The next thing Hazel felt in the blackness was a soft breeze passing through her blonde hair, wind whistling in her ear. There was a nudge on her left side, and she groaned as she felt most comfortable in this semi-awakened state. Then, as Hazel awoke from her sleep, a voice called to her.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
There was another nudge, and another. Hazel slowly opened her eyes, a darkened, cloudy sky above her, some stars shining in the darkness. Hazel clenched her hands while her vision focused, her fingers grabbing and pulling grass from the cold ground.
Hey, man, she's waking up.
Hey, lady, what are you doing here? This is a crime scene. You can't be here.
What? No, just leave me alone.
Lady, you can't be here.
Shake her, dude.
Hey, come on, get up.
What am I doing on the ground? Who are you?
We're the cleanup crew. For the crime scene, the better question is, who are you?
Cleanup crew? No, you're not supposed to be doing a cleanup until 8 tonight. I haven't finished looking over everything.
Are you a cop?
A cop? No, I'm a private investigator. I'm working with the police on the murder of the farmer that lived here. I need to check back in on the barn. There's things I haven't looked over. Just come back at 8. I promise I'll be done then.
Ma'am, it's 9.
What? No, it can't be. I was just inside the barn.
Here, let me help you up.
Thanks. Why can't I remember anything? Why am I outside?
Are you sure you're all right?
The crewman looked down at Hazel's arm and torso. Through the fabric of her shirt came a crimson stain on her left arm, pushing through the cloth as it pooled, the blood rapidly staining her shirt.
Oh my God, you're bleeding!
What?
Holy shit!
I don't feel anything. Here, let me look.
Pushing up the sleeve, Hazel saw 3 large, deep gashes on her left arm. Flesh split wide open, blood oozing from the wounds quickly.
Oh, what the fuck? What the hell did this?
You don't remember? What the hell happened to you?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I'll call 911.
Hazel sat there on the cold grass of the farm, gawking at the gashes on her arm that she could neither feel nor comprehend. She simply stared down at the crimson blood that rushed and dripped down her arm, wondering what it was that came rushing at her in the dark.
Elder Sign was created and produced by Thomas McKean. It was written by Thomas McKean, Toby Riggs, and Lalandra Chrisman Stratton. It is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license with not all rights owned exclusively. Music was provided and approved by Peter Helland, Cryo Chamber Dark Ambiance, and Bong Ra. You can find the music of Peter Helland at his website at peterbhelland.com, or just check the link in the show notes. The many musics of Cryo Chamber can be found at their site, cryochamberlabel.com. Bong Ra's music, including songs performed by the Kilimanjaro Dark Jazz Ensemble and the Fuji Doom Jazz Corporation, can be found at their site, listed in the show notes. Bong Ra's current project, The Thing with 5 Eyes, can be found at the project's Bandcamp, thethingwithfiveeyes.bandcamp.com. Stay up to date with everything happening with the show by following us on Twitter or liking our page on Facebook. For full-time coverage on the show, you can also join our newsletter. All of these links are listed in the show notes below. Next time on Elder Sign, we continue on with Chapter 1, Murder on the Farm. Thanks for listening.